And it's truly my honor, my pleasure to introduce Cindy, who will be our next speaker. And I just wanted to say that, when I got to DA not that long ago, I was drawn to Cindy's warm, welcoming manner and always impressed with her commitment to her own recovery, commitment to the group and to service. And as I got to know her a little bit better, I really was inspired by her courage and her honesty to work the most challenging part of the program, which is the steps. And Cindy's been a blessing in my life and in this group's life. And I hear my higher power speak through her in her loving and compassionate and warm way. And there is no other who has a sense of humor like Cindy, which is absolutely necessary for me to work through this recovery. So, Cindy, I want to thank you today for your willingness to share your experience, strength, and hope with us. And so now it's your turn to share. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much for that wonderful welcome. Thank you so much, Nadine. This is one of the things about being in recovery that I find hard to do is to let other people see me. I guess I've got some courage because I might be afraid, but I've said my prayers, and
Good.
I'm going to say that if you would join me in just a moment, I'd like to invite my higher power, the God of my understanding, into this conversation that we're going to have right now with this conference. Dear higher power, please be with me. Bless my mind before I think and my mouth before I speak. Be with those here. Help me to be of your service. Amen. My understanding is I am to say a little bit about my life, what it was like, what happened to bring me into DA, and kind of a bit about how my life is now. And so I'm going to tell you a little bit about my, I didn't read that. Okay. Tell a little bit about my childhood, that I'm, some of the, these are going to be basic things. Number one, okay, I was the second child in a line of six. I had a mother and a father in home growing up. So I went to kindergarten. My older sister took me into the kindergartner room, and I was crying my eyes out. I'm just going to keep talking until God kicks in, okay? And I didn't want her to leave me there. I remember that. And so the teacher said, "Well, why don't you go over there and play with some toys?" And so I thought, well, that sounded like a good idea. I can remember this. And so I went over to the box of toys that had trucks and horses and things like that, the ones for the boys, I guess, because she said, "Wait, wait, wait. Why don't you go play with that kitchenette over there for the girls?" And I had no interest in that, but I complied. I went over and I said, "Oh, look, a sink. Oh, look." I know I did. And when she wasn't looking, she was talking to my sister or someone else. I went back to over to play with the trucks and I was happy about it. But part of me, I thought, there must be something not right if she's having to calm me down and tell me that. I'm not too sure. Well, carry on. Carry on. I'll tell you back home as early in my childhood, my dad was okay, and then he just grew more irritable, restless, and discontent. And he was what I've heard people talk about, somebody who raged a lot, and no one really knew exactly why. He did do that. And so I just put that in the background because it has had a bearing on my the way I see myself and the world. In middle school, I was in the algebra class and I was seen as a heavy thinker. And I didn't understand why people said that to me. And then the first class or so, the teacher said, turn to page 32 and work all of the odd questions. And so in my mind, I said, how do I know if they're odd? I never heard anybody say odd anything else. So I worked a few of them and I worked the first one, and no one else raised their hand when we had the next day at class. And I went up to the board and I did it. I worked my work, and that was good. And it worked out okay. And then when asked some more questions and no one else had the question, and he turned to me and said, did you work this one? I said, no, I didn't. I didn't finish it with, I didn't think it was odd. It didn't fit in anyway. And then at the end of the class, he gave us the assignment, turn to page 34 and work all the even numbered problems. And then it dawned on me, oh, you see, I was making it more complicated than it needed to be. But I didn't, that's just where I started. And that was in middle school. Went on to high school. That's where, you find out that there's more peers. To watch and to get along with, and then there's the interest in sex, be it with the opposite sex or the same sex. And it turned out that I was same sex interested, and the time came that I came to my house to visit. This friend drove her out. My girlfriend drove her out to the driveway, and we sat out there and we visited way too long. And my mom flashed the lights on the garage, like, it's time to come in. And I said, you guys, my mom's flashed me. I got to go in. And then we were having too much fun. So I didn't get up and go in. And then she did it again. My mom flashed again. And I said, okay, now I've really got to go. I've really got to go. So I got out of the car, walked in the house, and I was confronted there and then by both my parents that I was living a very, very selfishly, that I didn't care what the neighbors thought, that I didn't care about the family. And I did receive a whipping for that. I'll leave it at that. No, none of us talked about what happened. I was 17 and I don't know what just happened, but we never talked about it even years later. I just thought, well, obviously they don't approve of who I am. Okay. Keeping on. Bah, 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 bah. It's like I felt like my parents were more worried about what the neighbors thought than about how I felt or what was going on with me. And so I got the message I didn't matter. What I thought and what I did mattered, but it didn't matter if I wanted to do something individual for myself. Okay, so we go on, we go to college. I go to college and I have some visitation of depression, and I go to the doctors and they give me some medicine for a short period of time, and I carry on. And then I got a job after I graduated college, and it was a place where they had higher expectations than I was able to give. But I kept going, trying to fulfill that expectation, and kept falling short. And so that was evidence to me again, I'm not up to it all. I don't matter. I can't, I'm not good enough. So I will go ahead. During that time, I did have like several therapists that I would talk to periodically, and I was on medication, and I am still now. I did try to go off of medication with the doctor's help. But we decided that I couldn't go all the way cold turkey. So here I am. Meanwhile, I work until I retire. When I retire, I didn't really want to retire, but it was time to retire for extenuating circumstances, in that I had joined some deferred retirement plan, and I had to stop working after 7 years. And when I go on that program, and then my mother-in-law had moved in with me. I'm married to Deanna, and she and I lived together in a larger house, and her mother came to live with us. And it was all supposed to be because she wanted to have some social life or someone more family to interact with her. And it was really amazing to think about that. So I she came to us, and we started noticing things that were a little different. And basically she had started into some dementia, but we didn't know to what degree. And as the months went on, she declined more, but yet she was able to take care of herself more or less. Someone was here. So I was working at, the COVID thing happened, and I got assigned to work remotely from home. So it was convenient for me to be able to be here with her. And then it came time in May of 2001 for me to retire because of my age. I didn't have to retire, but I thought I was really having a very difficult time with my boss's boss and the work, and then the need for someone to be here to take care of my mother-in-law. So I retired. Well, that was a shock, like some people have mentioned. It was a shock for me to let go of my identity and work because I threw myself into work. I missed family functions, family vacations and all that, just because I was wanting to work. And then now I'm not going to be working, and I don't bring home as much money that I'm retired. And so I kind of started going into a little bit of a funk. And I was, and here I am. I'm expected to take care of my mother-in-law with dementia. I have no idea. But yet I know that I had been through so much in my life. I thought, surely, surely I could do this. With the help of God and my family, we could do this. I had thrown in there also, I was in another fellowship at the time too. And, it eventually grated on me so much that I would pick on myself for the decisions I had made. And then everything that would happen would bother me, and I would get irritable and discontent myself. And I'm thinking, this is not the way I imagined my life to be at this time in my life, or at any time, actually. And one thing led to another, and I started staying in bed and being gripey. And then I'd do what I had to do around the house. And then it hit me. I was in bed for 4 weeks. All I got up to do was to eat or go to the restroom. I did not have any interest in hygiene or interacting. I did not want anyone to ask anything of me. Well, fortunately, because I had a spouse who was compassionate, she carried on what needed to be done while I was laying up in the bed. Now, I did not feel glad about that. It would bother me. Eventually, it bothered me that I was putting a burden on her, but I really hated that I was not living my life. I was just missing it. And so we went on a camping trip to a cabin, and it was real quiet, no TV, no radio, no cell reception, no Wi-Fi, whatever. And I guess I was able to hear my own thoughts. And I realized I have got to do something. I have got to do something. I don't want to keep going this way. I don't want to necessarily die, but if I didn't wake up in the morning, I think I would be all right. And that really, really concerned me. I had never been to that point. And then I went to the other fellowship meeting, and someone mentioned, this really helps my depression to study the big book. And I thought, maybe I'll Google if there's a 12-step program for depression. Why not? Now, this was all in December of 2021. Okay. And so I went and I found Depression Anonymous. Hallelujah. But then I said, when do they have a meeting? I knew I needed a meeting because I realized from my other fellowship, I can't do this by myself. And I certainly didn't do any good on my own. I mean, I had self-help books on my on my bookshelf that, well, it they didn't, I would read at them. I never knew how to apply them. So I knew I needed support. So I found where there were online meetings. Oh, wow. I could go to online meetings and be here for my mother-in-law and do something for me, me. Oh my goodness. I was so excited. I couldn't wait till the first meeting. My therapist I was seeing at the time, he said, oh, let me get send off for the books. Let me get those books for you. And I, it just the idea of a 12-step program for depression just brightened me. So when I did go to my first meeting, there were some people who had been in DA for a while. And it was a night meeting. And I got there, you know, early, and I thinking, well, I wonder what this is going to be about. I mean, I understood 12 steps, but how does that help depression? And we got to talking, and I was told something I could take away from the meeting because I was really grasping and I wasn't hearing what I thought I would hear, although I didn't know what I was supposed to hear. Someone said, you're powerless over your first thought. He says, usually my first thought is dark. He says, but we can, when we become aware, we can choose to have a different thought. And then we can choose to take action on that different thought. And I walked away from that meeting and I just felt hope. And I started reading in the little book and the big book. Of course, I didn't know which one was what, but I started reading in the small one, which is the manual. And I was still coming out of coma. I felt like out of a coma, depression coma. And I would read a sentence and maybe finish a paragraph. And I said, I don't know exactly what I just read. Let me try that again. And I have to read it two or three times and then maybe make down a page. And then I have to set it down and decide. Am I going to get this? I don't know. But I was kept going to meetings. I went to meetings every day, sometimes twice. And I realized that I was feeling better knowing I was not the only one that had had the feelings I had, the desperateness that I had. So I didn't feel so alone, and that gave me hope, and I would share. I don't know how it works, but they told me I listen to learn and I share to heal. So I didn't understand it, but I kept coming back. And then I at my first meeting, I did ask for a sponsor because of my other fellowship, and there wasn't anyone available to do it there at that time. And then I contacted a lady that was in charge of the contact list, and she was able to collect names. And by February, we started February 22, we started a co-sponsorship group. And we got into there, and it was exciting because we were getting to know each other and we were kind of bonding over, oh my God, you too? Yeah, me, yeah. And it was just so helpful to know that I was not alone, the only one that, but then 2 months into that, I started getting worried that I just wasn't getting it beyond going to a meeting. I said, oh my God. In the other program, I was able to feel something more sooner. But yeah, I've been in the old program for years. I forgot. I forgot that I had to build up. I had to learn this, let God work in my life, let others work in my life, let people love me and me try to accept that love. So when I when Dana reminded me of that, I was so happy because I said, oh yeah, I can give myself a break. Because I was ready to catch up for lost time. I wanted to be better, quick and in a hurry. Yesterday or last week would have been okay. But then I had to learn growth is gradual. It takes work and time to get better. So I thought, well, I've come this far. It's better than anything else I got going. I'm going to keep going. Well, we've worked the steps 1 through 7 in the workbook as a group. And what happened was right about the time we start step 7, one of the ladies in our co-sponsor group got sick and then she died. And I stumbled around for a couple of weeks thinking, well, what is my, shaken up about, oh my God, I lost somebody I care about. And I realized I was able to feel my feelings and I journaled. I wrote out how I felt. I wrote a letter to the God of my understanding saying, I don't understand this, but I need to tell you. I miss her and I'm hurt. And I hope the rest of us can hang together. And I made it. I kept hanging in there and I kept coming back. And then our group started to fizzle because once we lost that member, the glue kind of loosened and the commitment diminished and we dispersed. And then I was the only one coming to meetings, so we had to reevaluate, have to adjourn and maybe come back again. But meanwhile, I told them, I'm going to find another group to join. I have got to have help doing this. And I also got a DA sponsor. Oh my gosh, because there weren't any available when I first came in. And then some newer people came in saying they had one. I thought, wait, let me ask. I'm going to go get that phone book. And so I called, and the first person I asked said yes. And I call her once a week and anytime I need to. And I've been working some on step 8, and we went back in step 4. And I wanted to let you know that I found out that when people criticized me or said something to me, I believed them. I was looking to other people for validation. And that's where we found my core beliefs that needed to have adjustment. The core belief that I'm not worthy, I'm not valuable, I have nothing to give, I'm not worth your time, I'm not worth someone listening to me, or just however you want to. It's just, am I even worthy for recovery? And I was reminded, yes, you're worthy of recovery. It's okay. And I know that I don't really know how much we've been going here, but I'm almost to the point that I might be closing up. The in our this lady named Dr. Dorothy Rowe, she has been instrumental with Dr. Smith in making out some of our literature and the whole idea of 6 immutable beliefs. When I first saw those, I thought, well, none of that belongs to me. I've gotten through that. I've got over that or this. Guess what? I got a little bit of all of these. And then that's how I was able to totally, validate or come to the conclusion that my core beliefs, the way I was thinking about myself, wasn't working, isn't working, and I need to look at it a different way. And I ask my higher power to help me be willing to change. And with time and work and going to this co-sponsorship group and keep coming to the meetings, it's happening for me. It's happening for me. Not only did my person in my co-sponsorship group die, my mother-in-law eventually passed away, and I was able to do that with grace and dignity. And this past June, my dad at age 93 passed away, and I was able to seek help to sort out my feelings and my issues with a professional. But I've kept coming back and not sadden myself to bed. That's wonderful. Oh my, that's hitting me. Well, anyway, that's all I wanted to share. I am working in a co-sponsorship group and hope to give back to others. And with that, I'll pass the time. Thank you.
Cindy, we want to thank you for that wonderful, powerful share. Thank you very much. And at this time, we'll open the meeting up to, we'll do 3-minute shares, right? So I'm going to call on Akila first. You have 3 minutes.
Thank you. Hi, this is Akila. Thanks, Cindy, for your share. I'm grateful member of this fellowship. One thing I realized while you sharing was that feeling of shame or unworthiness when someone says something to me. It was there for a long time, but I want to share this incident with you. When I attended the Depenon meeting, Hugh said that he goes to church every day to just center himself. And my kids' daycare is in the basement of church. I did leave my kids to daycare, and I just went to church and sat there for some time. And this pastor walks in and he tells, "You're not supposed to be here. It's only open for su on Sunday, and it's like you're not supposed to be here. It's not for you." And you know, I think it's thanks to this group and my recovery. If it was before the 12 steps, I would have felt so shameful. I would have felt like I'm a robber or thief trying to steal from church or something like that. But when they said that, I was like, yes. I was very genuine, and I just said to them, I just came here to see the Lord. And in my mind, it was like, it's okay, this is the place of Lord, everyone are welcome. Like, no one can tell me that I'm not welcome in the temple of Lord. So I didn't feel shameful. That's a very, very big thing for me. I didn't take on that feeling of worthlessness, shame, or feeling bad. And it may be a very small incident for others. It is a very, very big incident for me, because especially when someone in the position of authority tells me something, I feel shameful. I ruminate over it for 1,000 days and I feel I'm worthless and all that. But this time it was like, I didn't even get up from the chair. I said, I'll pray and then I'll go when I'm centered. So I sat there for next half an hour in church. I'm not even a Christian. I'm a Hindu by religion, but it doesn't matter. Lord is everywhere. I sat there for another half an hour, did my prayer, centered myself, and only then I got up and went, because I wanted to go, not because someone said, okay, I'm not allowed there. In my mind, it was like, this is temple of God. All children are welcome. It doesn't matter. So thanks for letting me share.
Thank
Thank
you.
you.
Matthias, you're next.
Yeah, thanks, Nadine. This is Matthias recovering from depression. Cindy, thank you so much for your share, and I'm glad you belong to my family of choice. I could relate to a lot of what you said, especially the core beliefs, because I had exact the same experience when I first opened the book. I thought, ah, oh, no, that doesn't account for me. And but working with a sponsor, I'm beginning to uncover stuff like maybe a year ago. If you would have asked me, do you feel ashamed sometimes? I would have said no. And I've begun to discover that, of course, yes, I do feel ashamed sometimes. And the way I look at myself is not helpful. I need to change that. And so I'm beginning to really uncover that deep hidden core beliefs, and I hope I'm going to change them. And again, thank you so much for being here and for your share.
Thank you. Hugh, you're on.
Am I on now? Is it on?
Yes.
Yes.
All good. Thank you so much, Cindy, for your powerful, inspiring share today. A number of things directly hit me right where I live. And, talk about growing up and how important that is, positively or even negatively. There's a learning there. But that's the way I grew up. Occasions where somebody, like a teacher, like I was in the third grade, said, you'll never amount to anything like you won't be like your brother, or you won't be like so and so. And my brother was about 2 years ahead of me in the grade school there. And I can still, at that time, feel the redness of my face, filled with shame, because they stood me up in front of the class and I couldn't say what I needed to say or like they wanted me to say it. But I just felt heat all over my face. And I kept feeling that for a number of years later. Whenever I think of that incident, I would feel myself filled with shame. Finally, I learned that you can make a mistake and forgive yourself, move on. But when you're filled with shame, that's then you believe if then you can believe or you do believe, like I did believe, that that's all that's me. I'm filled with shame. And so I just want to thank you for your wonderful presence and what you say at meetings. And I'm good enough now, and not really good enough, but you know what I mean. So
Yeah.
thank you so much for being here today. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Hi, Catherine. You're next.
Hello there. Hi, everybody. My name is Catherine, calling in from Ireland. I just wanted to pop on, and I've been here, but I've been a bit distracted. But I wanted to stay and listen to Cindy, and everybody that I can. But Cindy has been so kind to me, a newer member. You have an aura. Of some powerful but gentle, there's something there, and it touched me. And you have made me feel so welcome. And I know it's just the beginning, but there's an understanding there that you kind of get. You get me. I've explained a couple of things that I don't feel like I should be here. I don't know where I should be, but there's something there that's keeping me part of this group. And I believe you have an instrumental part to play in that. What you said really touched me. I was taking notes, and when you were a child and you felt there's something inherently wrong with you because you don't choose to do what you think you should be doing, like playing with the other toys, and then other stuff that happened that made you think, well, obviously I'm defected, that I don't belong. And I grew up with that sense forever. My first emotion and my first feelings are shame. I have come from an alcoholic, mentally ill family, and when I was at school, I carried this. But as a child, you don't know what you're carrying. So if things happened in school, I couldn't understand why I was so sensitive, and I couldn't take rejection. If a teacher told me off, the other children might be laughing when they got corrected, but I would think this was the end of the world, So I then began to feel, obviously there's something wrong with me, but what I'm learning as I grow up and as I'm still growing up, actually I was very strong, to just because I thought I was oversensitive. I was carrying stuff I shouldn't have been carrying, and I'm learning to try and face that and let that go. And when you also said about your core beliefs about yourself, they just don't work. They're not working. And I'm coming to that conclusion. It hasn't worked. It's not going to work. Beating myself up and berating myself on the hour, it hasn't really got me very far, And my default thoughts about myself are so entrenched. I can look outside and say, oh, it's raining and you're a piece of shit about myself. It comes that naturally to me. It's like, oh my God, but I'm catching it. I think I'm catching it. I think I might just it might be happening, but I think I'm now actually just challenge that a tiny little bit, So I'll thank you. Just wanted to say thank you, and thank you everybody for this group. And I think somebody said, I wish there was a 24 hour because we could do with it. I could do with it. But thank you so much. And thank you, Hugh. What a privilege and pleasure to be on this and to get to meet you. I'm so excited for what's to come for me. And thank you, everybody. It's lovely to see and hear you. Take care.
Thank you, Catherine.
Hi, Doreen.
Hey, Nadine, you look gorgeous. Radiant. Oh my God, Cindy, I've always thought you were so awesome because I'm kind of loud and I speak up and you say a lot of truth, but you do it in a very quiet, humble way, and I really admire that about you. I've always enjoyed listening to you, and I remember thinking, like, you were one of the first people that I heard share, and I'm thinking, wow, like people are so authentic here. And I loved when you talked about those mistaken core beliefs. And I have that core of shame. I mean, on a good day, maybe it's only 50%, but you know, it's there. It's there. And I'm so grateful to be able to come and be in my chosen family and to benefit from all of you, everything that you say and what you bring here. And I hope in 20 years I'm still talking with you, Cindy, like just like this. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, Stacy.
Hello. Hi, guys. Stacy, recovering from depression. Cindy, I am so grateful you said yes to speak at this conference. And I'm so grateful I got to hear your share because you have an amazing story of recovery. You have so much to give, and it is a pleasure. It's an honor to be able to work with you. And, you know, I identify so much those core beliefs, figuring out using the process of the steps to get to that, you know, and realizing, oh my God, this does apply to me. And just, you know, you have the willingness to do the things that are required for recovery. And you suit up and you show up and you do it. And like you said, you do it with dignity and grace. And it's a beautiful thing to see. So thank you, Cindy. So grateful
Thank
to be able
you.
to work with you. Thanks, guys.
Hi, thank you.
Hi, Shauna.
Hi, Nadine. Thanks so much for chairing this meeting. And thank you, Bill, for getting this conference together. It's amazing. And Cindy, I love you so much. You have helped me so much in my recovery, and you've been this quiet strength. You know, after every meeting, you're there, and you're there loving and listening, and then speaking, not stealing the show kind of thing. Like, there's something so special about you. And I'm so glad that you're here with us and that you helped me. I remember reaching out to you to ask, how do I start a co-sponsorship group? You know, and I had my own journey with a co-sponsorship group that also did not last, you know. But I'm still, because of VA, I'm still friends with the people in the group. So when the group split up, it didn't mean that that relationship was over, you know. And I have a sponsor as well. But I've admired you since I first met you and got to feel your presence in the groups. And I thank you so much, and I'll pass.
Thank you, Shauna.
Hi, Bill.
You're on mute.
Yeah, I'm great with anyway.
It's okay, I'm glad you're.
pilot error cause of the flight failure. Cindy, I want to thank you so much for sharing your story. And I want to thank you also for taking the gentle nudge to begin sharing, because you have an amazing story to tell. And I just want to say that from the bottom of my heart. I'm glad you're experiencing healing. And one thing that you mentioned in his share that I think is important for everyone to begin thinking about, Friday, May 30th of 2025 is the 40th anniversary of this fellowship. We need to do something to commemorate that day. And I would like somebody else to volunteer to lead that effort. I've set up the last two conferences, and it's a difficult job, but I think something needs to be done to commemorate the 40th anniversary of this fellowship. And with that, I will share the time. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Bill.
Hi, Jeannie W.
Hello, everybody. Thank you, Nadine, Bill, your service. Everybody, you've put so much time and love and care into having this weekend. Thank you. And thank you, Cindy, so much for your share. You know, I heard people share that you have so much to give. The thing that's touched me in such healing ways is that you give it. Not only do you have it, but you have given it. And you have given it to me. And higher power has moved through you, you know, to touch me. And I think that is the gift of this program. Because some of us, well, for me, it can take a lot for my higher power to get through. You know? And higher power has really needed people with just the right magic. Just the right tools, you know, sometimes a jackhammer, sometimes a little needle and thread. What I heard you speak about is the willingness. I heard you say being willing to be willing, and that prayer. And I just so need it. My rigid attachment to you know, it's like I will even have this nice conversation with you and say, oh, geez, that old thinking of being mean to myself isn't working. And darn, if the next morning, the next week, in this three, I'm still doing it, refusing to give myself compassion. Like, and I can tell you psychologically, on the one hand, you know, I know where that comes from, but on the other hand, what I know, for me, it is the cunning and baffling of my disease. And it wants my heart, and it wants my soul, and it doesn't like Cindy's talking to me, or Nadine's talking to me, or Bill's, or Barbara's, or Elizabeth's, or I could go all through all the names here, you know, because it's on. My disease wants my soul. So your shares, your help, and all of you, you know, we talk on the one level, but be in that vessel for higher power, because the shell is so strong in me, you know, and it takes my higher power and my heart. Thank you for being willing to be that vessel for my higher power, and especially those of you during service today. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, Jenny.
Thank you. Hi, Keith.
Hi. I want to thank everybody. I hear everybody giving from their hearts, giving to everybody. And I feel selfish right now in what I'm about to share, because I'm not ready to give yet. I've been participating in DA for about a month, and I'm still struggling with the whole concept of higher power. And I'm just starting to read the steps in the green book. And they're making sense to me in my head, but they're not making sense to me in my heart yet. Mm-hmm. And I feel so sad. And I feel so hopeless. And I can't even say I'm Keith, I'm recovering from depression. I'm Keith, and I'm suffering and struggling with depression. And I have a plea My plea is for somebody, anybody in this group, anybody in the fellowship at large, to suggest to me how I can find a sponsor or how can I find a sponsorship group. And it's obviously not the proper spot in this group to respond verbally to the whole meeting. But I will put my contact information in the chat. And if somebody or somebody's would reach out to me, I'd be grateful. I need so much help to get over this threshold and to begin to make progress. Thank you for listening.
Thank you.
Thank you, Keith.
You're for Keith, sure.
Back. Thank you, Steve.
Want to thank everybody for sharing. And at this time, we're going to close the meeting. And I'll be stopping the recording right now.